Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Join us every Saturday for a deep discussion about the biggest stories of the week. Go behind the scenes with journalists, political figures, and newsmakers to get a unique look at our city. And also, I want to hear from you, the listener. So please send any questions, critiques, or sponsorship inquiries to my email at hsanders@wweek.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of the Dive Podcast. Welcome back to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Thank you so much for joining us today on September 18th for episode 38 of the Dive. We have an interview this week with the writer of the Willamette Week cover story, Anthony Effinger. Anthony tells us about his article all about ivermectin and COVID conspiracies, so stick around for that. But before we get into that story and that interview, all the headlines, everything that happened this week, this is the 90-second news flash. By now, I'm sure you've all heard about what happened in Texas recently, where lawmakers placed very limiting restrictions on when women can get abortions. Mayor Ted Wheeler responded by proposing that $200,000 of the general budget this fall go towards reproductive rights organizations, essentially saying that this new move in Texas impacts every state and every person because it could lead to the overturning of Roe v. Wade down the road. The Portland City Council accepted the move already, so almost $250,000 is going to places that help people get access to abortions. Folks, we've updated you week in, week out about the commotion going on at the Nabisco factory. If you are just now jumping in on the story, basically workers are striking at the Nabisco factory in Portland. The latest kink in the story is that the group that was hired to secure the factory allegedly assaulted a Portland Teamster, so now there's a lawsuit being brought against that security team. As Sheriff Mark Reese gears up to end his term as Multnomah County Sheriff in December of 2022, he has one parting gift to his fellow officers, and that is a Northeast Portland warehouse that will be turned into a police training facility, complete with a $3 million shooting range. So their shots better be on point now. In this week's print and online edition, we have a fascinating story by Sophie Peel all about the car thieves in Portland. From June 30th, 2020 to June 30th, 2021, almost 8,000 cars were stolen in Portland. So while you're worried about that, let me finish off with some good news, and that is that a new killer burger has opened on 23rd Street. I mean, I'm still taking Little Big Burger over Killer Burger or any other place. I think it's the best burger I've ever had, especially better than In-N-Out. If you are an In-N-Out fan, you don't really actually open your mind up to new burgers. Anyways, we can go down that discussion another day. I may be on an island here, but you tell me what burgers you like. This has been the 90-Second News Flash. We turn now to our story of the week. Freelance writer Anthony Effinger tells us about two people named Brett Weinstein and Heather Hying. They are professors turned podcasters who have recently come to the forefront of the anti-COVID vax movement. They are some of the loudest cheerleaders for the drug ivermectin, which is used for many things, including horse and animal deworming. While it hasn't been cleared to treat COVID by the FDA or the CDC, Weinstein and Hying have helped increase the popularity of the drug through their popular podcasts and through their appearance on the biggest podcast in the world, the Joe Rogan Experience, hosted by Joe Rogan. So Weinstein and Hying have promoted this drug, and it's been flying off the shelves, with people going into pet stores to buy this drug in animal doses and misdosing themselves, and people have been getting poisoned, and it's been a whole mess. We go into depth about this story with Anthony Effinger. Here is our discussion. So, Anthony, you wrote this article about Brett Weinstein, and yet in the article you mentioned that he wouldn't sit down for an interview about this story. Was there ever a moment when he said, hey, I'm not going to sit with an interview, that you were like, okay, this story's dead? Because how can I write a story where the main character of the story isn't going to talk to me? Did that concern you at all?
No, I mean, ideally you'd like to talk to the subject, but I got to tell you, in my career, I was 24 years at Bloomberg News, where I did a lot of stories on, I called them billionaires behaving badly, big hedge fund managers, money guys who they're almost always guys, who would rarely talk to us. So we had to work around them a lot. You know, we weren't the Wall Street Journal in the beginning, especially, so we didn't have as much cred. And a lot of times they, you know, just thought they could ignore us. And there's just a million ways to get a story done without somebody cooperating. You know, the best PR guy I ever met in the business always said to his clients, you know, tell your story or somebody else will. Right. And he always advocated for people to talk to journalists for that reason, because there's plenty of other people out there who will tell your story, no matter who you are. So no, it didn't concern me too much.
You know, to be honest, when I went into this article, before I had read the article, I thought of ivermectin as just a horse dewormer. If you take it, you are absolutely out of your gourd, right? But then in this article, there are a few things that are kind of interesting to me. You mentioned that it has a stellar safety record, that it's been approved for human use in the past, and a study in Australia that you mentioned showed that it prevented replication of COVID-19. So are people still out of their minds if they think that ivermectin is a foolproof way, or at least a decent way, to combat COVID-19?
No, we're not talking about injecting bleach here, right? It's an order of magnitude or two better than that. I mean, you know, the inventors of ivermectin got a Nobel Prize for the discovery, and it's been one of the most successful drugs in the world for treating worms in animals, worms in people, other diseases in people. You know, it's a really effective treatment for river blindness, which is a tragic disease that actually causes blindness. The problem with ivermectin is there have been no good studies that have shown that the stuff works on COVID. And in fact, some of the studies that encouraged people in the beginning have been withdrawn because of ethical concerns, because they were not, the data sets were flawed, people say. There were some charges of plagiarism. And as for the Australian study that you just talked about, where ivermectin killed the virus in the petri dish in vitro, to get those kind of concentrations in a human body would be very difficult without having a toxic reaction, or, you know, having a high toxicity. So there's just no real good proof. And the problem we have right now is that people aren't listening to that. And they are, when they can't get this stuff in the human form from their doctor, they're buying it in feed stores. Okay. And those are doses and formulations for horses and animals. And they're taking this stuff without any guidance from a physician. And that's why you're seeing all these calls to poison centers around the country.
So we're seeing an uptick in that. Is that correct?
100%. You know, I will say this, the numbers are small still. It's off a small base, but the calls to poison centers are not huge anyway. And so anytime I think poison centers see something like this on the horizon, where all of a sudden you have a huge uptick, they get worried, right? I mean, they've had people hospitalized. They've had people becoming disoriented. They've had people hallucinating. It can cause nausea. It's very unpleasant. It's a wild ride if you get the wrong dose of this stuff.
Why do people, you mentioned Rogan, and you mentioned him in the article and just right now in the interview, why do people care so much about what Rogan says? He's an entertainer at the end of the day. I wouldn't listen to Seth Meyers for advice. You know what I mean? So it's like, why does it get so many headlines when Rogan says, oh, I took ivermectin? Yeah, I'm just like, well, yeah, who cares? I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, Hank, I think you're alone, or not alone, but you're in a minority who knows that Rogan is an entertainer, right? I think many people don't know where he came from, right? I mean, I thought he was an MMA guy, and I didn't know he was a comedian before that or during that. But Rogan has the number one rated podcast in the United States. Okay, he reaches some vast number of listeners every week. And that's why he is important, right? His outreach on these issues is just vast. So when he starts talking about ivermectin and talking about how he's not vaxxed, it becomes, you know, part of the public health emergency, right? Yeah. So that's why I think it's his reach that makes him relevant.
I have a question about this. So I want you to tell a story about the time that led to Weinstein's departure from Evergreen College. Tell us about that with being asked to not attend school for the day.
Okay, so here's the story. Brett Weinstein and his wife were professors at Evergreen State College in Olympia, which is a very liberal college. It was an experimental college set up, and all was going along well until one year when the school decided to change the way they did a day. They called it a day of absence. In years past, they would, all the people of color would leave campus to show people what the place looked like with no people of color. So it was saying, look,
to highlight the importance of people of
color. Yeah, here's what you'd be missing if we weren't here. Okay. And then they would then they would come back the next day and they would have a day of presence and they would talk about what that was like. And it was supposed to get people thinking about race, discrimination, equity, and all these things that need to be grappled with. Well, in 2017, they flipped the script. School administrators asked white people to stay away for a day. And administrators there and other faculty will tell you that it was just a request. It wasn't mandatory, okay, that white people stay away. Weinstein felt like it was compulsory, that they were required to stay away. And he wrote a lot of angry emails to the community asking why they were doing that. These emails got out, students got a hold of them and were enraged. And on one day, they came to his classroom as a group, a big, large group. Weinstein called it a mob, and accused him of being a racist and said he should be fired. And it bordered on violence. And that led to a few days of protests where the library doors were blocked. A meeting with the president was disrupted, and it turned into a very, very volatile situation. In the middle of all that, Weinstein went on Tucker Carlson for a piece called Campus Craziness and talked about how white people were being discriminated against. And you can imagine that Tucker Carlson loved this, right? Here he has a liberal professor, an avowed liberal progressive professor, saying, look how crazy this is, right? So in the middle of all this, he does that. So a lot of people said that was pouring fuel on the fire. Long story short, he and his wife sue the university for $3.85 million. The university settles. They leave with $500,000 and move to Portland. And that's the end of that story. And that's what really launched him into his next career.
Yeah. So that last part right there, that's what it launched. I have a question about that because I go to a school that is fairly liberal. Whenever they do the pollings of where would you vote, it all leans blue, and it's in Chicago, which is one of the most liberal cities in America. And yet if my school sent out a letter, even if it wasn't compulsory, but if it was just asking white people to stay home, I bet you would get a lot of professors and a lot of students to be not outraged, but at least upset about that, right? And maybe they don't respond the same way that Weinstein did, but there wouldn't be not everybody would be happy about it, right? Because it's outside of the Evergreen bubble, like you said, a very liberal college. So I don't understand really how someone goes from being upset about that notice, which I feel like many people around me would agree with, to being a conspiracy theorist that is sprouting messages about anti-vax. Where did that leap take place?
That's another great question. And that's another thing I tried to pin down in this story. In talking to people who know him and in looking at some of his writings, he has had a streak of iconoclasm, going against the grain, being, you know, sort of suspicious of the status quo, of accepted wisdom, and that is all great stuff, right? You want skeptics in this world, right? You do. So he has these tendencies, but what you really see, I think with that appearance on Tucker Carlson, which I gotta say, I don't know about you, but I'm not sure that in the middle of a campus crisis like that, I would go, while I was still a teacher, I would go on Tucker Carlson and kind of fan the flames. I'm just not sure I would do that, but he did. So I think there's an evolution there.
What was the most surprising thing that you found when working on this story?
Boy, there were so many. This kind of gets back to your question earlier about, can you do a story without cooperation from the subject? And we all know this now, but we all live our lives so in public now if we want to, right? I mean, I feel like my whole life is on the internet, right? I mean, I'm on Instagram, a little bit on Facebook, just because I think it's like there's major problems there. I know they're the same company, but somehow Instagram's more palatable to me. LinkedIn, Strava. I mean, if you wanted to, and maybe somebody will someday, you know, you could find a lot of stuff about me. I just don't think I'm all that interested.
When's your Rogan episode coming out?
Right. But Weinstein and Haiying live their lives in public. I mean, they talk about big ideas and minutia, kind of an equal measure on their podcast, right? Like, so you learn, there's so much weird stuff I know about them, right? That I shouldn't really know. Like, okay, here's an example. Like, Brett Weinstein has a bike helmet that plays music. He got one for his wife. She didn't like it. And they joke about how it was either the helmet or the marriage. Like, wow, that's a lot of detail. And then they talk about their regimen for COVID, like, you know, taking vitamin C, D, and zinc, taking weekly ivermectin. And it's just amazing to me how willing people are to have their whole lives out there, right? And then to have a journalist call up and say, hey, I'd like to do a story, and say, I'm not going to comment. It seemed a little odd.
That does seem odd. If they were to agree, if they were to have agreed, what would be your first question to them?
Wouldn't be my first question, but the burning question I have, and I obviously didn't get answered, is, do you feel any responsibility or remorse when you see the numbers of people who are in intensive care, who have died, who are terribly sick, and you see how many of those people are not vaccinated?
Anthony, that's my questions that I had prepared. Is there anything that I missed? Anything I should have asked?
You know, the only thing I would say is this is something that struck me late in the game when I listened to the last podcast that Heather and Brett did with Rogan. And, you know, they're talking and they're saying, listen, the government doesn't want you to take ivermectin. It doesn't want you to take vitamin D. It's not pushing these things because the big pharma can't make money on those things, right? Big pharma can't make money on this over-the-counter stuff that's cheap. And Rogan says something like, well, yeah, they can't sell health. Like, meaning like, there's no money in having people get healthy on their own, okay? And then literally 5 seconds later, he's reading an ad for something called Athletic Greens and talking about the health benefits of Athletic Greens and how it makes him feel better and improves his performance and all that. And then he's talking about something called CBDMD, which is another, you know, CBD-based product. I mean, what is he doing there except selling health? Okay. I can't see how those things exist in the same universe.
Well, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast for Willamette Week. I'm Hank Sanders. Before I let you go, I just want to let you all know that we do this show for you. We want you to give us feedback on how we're doing. Is there a topic you want us to cover that we haven't been covering? Please let us know. Social media, Twitter, email us, whatever you can do. We're here for you. So give us your feedback. Till then, till next time, come back for episode 39, Saturdays. You know the drill. You've done this long enough with us. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. Take care. Stay safe. See you next week. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. Includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.